Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for October 26th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me from Fukuoka, but in cyberspace, is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud? How you doing, man?
I'm both in Fukuoka and in cyberspace. That's like double duty. You know, I should get overtime for that.
Well, you don't get time and a half for that. I apologize, but double duty. Well,
do I get grieving duty?
No.
Something.
You get late night duty is what you're getting tonight.
Yeah, and early morning duty tomorrow.
All right, so on this week's show, we've got a look at the first two games of the Japan series, and we're going to talk about all the new managers and much more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so you got to go to Fukuoka and see these first two games in the Japan series. It's Sunday night here as we tape, and the SoftBank Hawks are up 2-0. Very easily. In fact, I tweeted just recently, the Swallows have 7 hits and 2 unearned runs in offensive baseball because they haven't had to play the bottom of the ninth.
It's been fairly offensive from the Swallows. Yeah, pretty much, you know. I could put it in a nutshell, you know, when they played very normal Swallows ball for a few innings, and then when they fell behind, they started pressing and playing like, oh, I've got to catch up with this swing.
Yeah, they're getting their beaks beaten in right now. It's not pretty. 4-2 was the score in Saturday's game one.
Yeah, one out from being a 4-0 shutout.
Should have been 2 4-0 shutouts, but there was an error involved. And then Kazuhiro Hatakeyama hits a home run, spoils the shutout. But Shota Takeda of the Hawks gets his complete game. Mm-hmm. And just before that game, now you were there, and I wanted to know how this kind of went down because we didn't hear very much about it. But Seiichi Uchikawa, mm-hmm. who batted fourth in every game that he played for the Hawks this season. I checked on that. So he was rendered or declared out indefinitely. But I think I saw somewhere where it said 3 weeks for this to heal with broken ribs. So he was not in the lineup for game one. How did that go down?
Well, it played out very oddly, and I spoke to the conditioning coach, Mr. Torita, who was not involved in that decision. But, you know, one of the points we made about this and related to it was the news was very strange. First of all, there was a rumor he went to the hospital, and some people who didn't know anything said, yeah, he wasn't feeling good, so I think he either had a cold or was getting tested for influenza.
Yeah.
Which might have been because he was having pains that he hadn't felt before. The pain was worse than when he suffered the injury during the Climax series.
Mm-hmm.
He knew he had an injury, but the extent of it was not clear. Okay, so the pain came back. He must have pulled a muscle, and that made it really hurt or something on Friday during practice. So in any case, the news was weird. It was like, oh, maybe he's got a cold, or maybe he's got the influenza. He didn't come to practice today. And then the trainer said, no, he has broken ribs. But I don't know, you know, you would think he's not going to play. And then they had to wait for the manager to say, what? Who's talking about him playing? I don't want him playing.
So all this stuff because Mr. Torita was on the show earlier this season, and he talked about the lines of communication being open and that everybody knew, everybody was on the same page in terms of injuries and blah, blah, blah. When you get to the Japan series, all that book gets just thrown out.
No, that's true. But what hasn't changed, everybody's on the same page, but what hasn't changed is nobody knows who is making the decision on these things other than the manager. There's no sort of like this person's responsible for this decision, this person's responsible. It's sort of like, oh, well, this is the situation, but we have to wait and see what the manager thinks before we actually know anything. So this is the way Japanese baseball is not the way it is in the States. In the States, there would be a procedure already in place.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody gets hurt, you know, even though, oh, he's hurt and he can't play, but I don't know if he's going to actually not going to play because the manager hasn't decided. You know, that's the way it is in Japan.
Right.
And it depends on who the manager is. Well, Kudo, if it had been Akiyama, he might have said, well, he's day to day. We're going to see if we can't get him into a game.
With the broken ribs.
Well, we had Hasegawa pinch hitting when he was still suffering from a broken leg last year.
Yeah, well,
and he could barely run to first.
Right.
So, I think Lakiyama would do that. But, but anyway, the point being that there is no clear point at which somebody could make a decision on it based on its severity or based on, you know, the situation, other than Kudo. So basically, they were all blowing their noses and scratching until waiting to see what the manager said.
Okay. Well, it seems like they didn't need him because, as I said before, Takeda was awesome. He should have had a three-hit shutout, but like I said, the error, and then he get allowed the error in the ninth, and then he allowed a two-run home run, so he ends up with a complete game. But this really had to be demoralizing. Oh, go ahead.
I would say he was awesome. I would say he and the Hawks' defense were awesome because he had, I mean, he had a 1-2-3 inning in the second, which really, okay, one very good play and one great play, and it's a 1-2-3 inning. And so that's kind of the way the game has been for the Hawks. They haven't missed much.
Yeah.
And that was about all the trouble that, that Takeda had until he went oops in the ninth inning.
Right, yeah. And you know, you talked about the defense, and they, you know, they played decent defense all season long, so that's not a surprise, but Takeda was really sharp. And this really had to be demoralizing too for the Swallows, in that the guys they wanted, who they wanted to go after in that lineup, in that Hawks lineup, and keep them off of base, kept killing them, kept getting hits, and the Hawks ended up with 15 hits. I tweeted it early on, everybody in the starting lineup had at least one hit, but then it turns out everybody who swung a bat for SoftBank that night had a hit. Even the pinch hitters were 2-for-2, and it was just a mauling. Like I said, they were getting their beaks beaten in this first game, and how they kept it a 4-2 game, I'll never know. They should have been more than that.
Yeah, well, I think the planning was better. I mean, the Hawks obviously are a better team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I haven't calculated what the chances of a 90-win team beating, you know, in a vastly better league beating a 550 team, but right. They've got to be in the series. The Hawks' chances of winning going in had to be close to 90%. I think one of the interesting thing about Takeda's game was basically, you know, what pitch is he known for?
That curve.
That 12-6. That 12-6 drop curve, which is just he's a master with it, and he didn't throw it. Until he threw it, I think, three times in the first inning. And the Swallows hitters, he said, you know, we just – the funny thing is, because he had a plan, I'm going to go with the fastball. And then as it turned out, he could see that everybody was looking for the curveball. Mm-hmm. He said, normally I don't pick up on these things so quickly, but I think because that's what he was expecting. He could see it. He said the only one who never figured out was Tetsuto Yamada. You know, what he was looking for, because, you know, he can hold back on the ball so long because he's got that great bat speed that I never figured him out. And I was afraid to the last time that he was going to make good contact on one of my fastballs and no one would find the ball.
Right. Yeah. Well, the Hawks were finding the ball with the bats. And again, Mitsuru Manaka, the Swallows manager, whom I've talked about liking, and even tonight in the game two loss, he was still cool and calm under pressure and under a lot of duress, I think, because his team wasn't doing what he thought and what he wanted. But I tweeted about putting Wataru Hiyane in the leadoff spot and not Tsuyoshi Ueda, and I thought that could be problematic, and I don't like Hiyane's bat. He's got speed and all that stuff, and he ended up drawing a walk in that first game, but I really don't like his bat, and I didn't think that was a good way to start off the game with your team. But they made the change for game two, so I was kind of happy with that. But he's sticking with game one. The Hawks end up with a 3-run fourth inning and a double by Kenji Akashi in the sixth inning. They added a run. Lee Daho took the cleanup spot for the injured Uchikawa, and he had three hits. So they look like they don't even need him. We always talk about their pitching and how great it is, and how many pitchers they could dole out to the other NPB teams and still have enough pitching to beat them.
Well, overstated. Their pitching, it's more the defense than the pitching.
It is. It's both. It's both.
Well, I know. Of course it's both, but what I'm saying is, their pitching is not really that far ahead of the rest of the Pacific League, while their defense is what I'm saying.
Well, I just think in terms of depth. I'm not talking about pitch for pitch, but I think in depth. They can run 15 guys out there and still win a bunch of games. And I don't think anybody in NPB could run as many as five out there and still win games consistently like they always do.
I'm just saying that, you know, you look at the season numbers, their pitching was very good, but their defense set them apart. And that the combination of the two was outstanding. But, of course, even better than their pitching and defense, their offense is even better.
Okay. All right, so game two, that was Sunday, and I think it's been over for about an hour and a half, would you say?
I think it's been over about 3 hours, actually. We're just waiting for we were just waiting to see whether Rick Vandenhoek was going to pitch the ninth inning or not. But Kudo said, I felt bad about him. Said I felt bad because I think he wanted to pitch the ninth, and he wanted the Hawks to have the first team to throw open a series with back-to-back complete games since 2005. Well, that's kind of a trivia question, but he said also, "Hey man, I got to get my bullpen in here. I got to get one of my relievers. You know, even if it's one guy, I want him in the game."
2005, back-to-back complete games.
Correct.
So that was the Lockton Marines.
That was indeed, and
I'm going to go with Ace.
I say Ace.
I know. I'm trying to Kobayashi, but I can't remember his first name all of a sudden.
Hiroyuki. No. He wasn't the ace. Shimizu.
Okay.
Yes. He threw a 7-inning complete game.
Okay, that was the Great Fog game?
That was the Great Fog out, yep.
Okay, and then Shunsuke Watanabe?
Shunsuke Watanabe followed it with game two.
All right. Cool, I remember. All right, since I was at neither one of those games. So game two, Vandenhoek again, he throws eight scoreless. Dennis Sarfati comes in, cleans it up in the ninth inning with a 1-2-3 quick ninth, and then the game, it wasn't that close. It was 4-0, and it just seemed like 8-0. And it actually, when again on this evening, Lee Dai-ho, they struck again in the fourth inning. He takes Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa deep to left field in the fourth inning for a 2-run shot, and it just seemed like the game was over right then to me.
No, I think the game ended. I don't know, but. I didn't think so, but, you know, it's the Swallows, again, went into panic mode a little bit. And, of course, the interesting thing we'll hear is that really the key to the game on Saturday was all the hits that came after the home run. Matsuda hit a home run with one out in the fourth inning, and then the next five guys reached base. Now, you can say, okay, two of them were infield singles, but one of them was a smash that was a good – it was an infield single because Shingo Kawabata did a good job to keep it in the infield.
Right.
Okay, the ball drove him so far into left field that he had no chance to make a play. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's that infield single. And, of course, Takaya has got to be, like, the surprise of the series. This guy's a career, I think, zero hitter.
Hashtag.
You're giving him that much credit, huh?
Well, okay, they had the third hit after the home run. Could have driven in a run, but Tsuyoshi Ueda threw him out from center field. Very nice throw. And so there's one out. Excuse me, now there's two outs. And then Takaya hits what should be the third out, except it never gets to third base. You know,
I said that the ball walked up and introduced itself to third base.
And Kawabata was like, he should have got down on his hands and knees and tried to blow it foul because he was sitting there waiting for it to roll foul and praying.
Yeah.
So the run scores on that. And it was a great at bat. I'll tell you, Takaya has had some great at bats in this series. I mean, he's basically saying anything in the strike zone, I'm going to try to foul it off. and eventually he got one, you know, he hit one off the end of the bat out of the zone. And he got that little nubber that no one could touch. And then he actually had a line single today, you know, so he was trying to foul it off and he missed.
Right.
Okay, I said he was a zero career hitter. I think he's a 180 career hitter. He's 34 years old. He's basically never done anything except he threw out a bunch of guys stealing this year.
Why is he playing?
He's the best guy at throwing out runners, and they figure he's the best pitch caller. Oh, they didn't win more games when he won. I mean, none of the catchers were that far apart. He's the least capable hitter on the Hawks' entire roster, but he's the best guy at throwing out base stealers. I figured they probably figured with you know, the three fast guys in the Swallows lineup, he'd be necessary. Mm-hmm. And he did. He made a great throw today. So
yeah, he got way down in the first inning, I believe. Yeah,
he's got an RBI, and he's got a he got a hit to start a rally.
He's although, killing him.
Yeah, he did.
And this is what I said. It's the guys.
Course. The Hawks on the bases too, but the, you know, that's the Hawks do that a lot. When they got big leads, they get reckless on the bases.
Yeah. It's just like I'm saying, these guys who they're targeting to, you know, make sure to keep off the bases and don't put in, you know, don't put potential RBIs out there for Yanagita and Lee, and obviously they're still fine without Uchikawa, who's not really a power hitter who bats in fourth in the four hole. But
they've done well against Yanagita, and they've done well against Matsuda, except for yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the whole package. The whole package is just too much for them.
Yeah. And obviously we talked about I think I said it before the playoffs started. I said, look, the only interesting part of the postseason is going to be the games that are not involving SoftBank and only the first stage of the Climax series, because I think once we get to SoftBank, it's just going to be boring, and they've really made it boring.
Yeah, well, this was their Sunday night's win in the Japan series was their, let me get here, sixth straight home win in the Japan series. It was their ninth straight postseason win.
And Van den Herk has won 11 games on the first team since he debuted, and that's including the postseason. He was 9-0 in the regular season, so nobody's losing.
Yeah, he got beat this year, but it was on the farm team where he went 5-1. So, you know.
Yeah, you say that. I want proof. No, I'm
16-1's not a bad record. No. You know, if you ask me.
And then Akira Nakamura, who has had to share a lot of time this year in and out of the lineup for the SoftBank Hawks, but he laced this line drive home run to right that kind of reminded me of the long ball he hit, the game winner he hit in Game 4, I think it was, last year in the Japan Series off of Tigers closer Oh Seung-hwan, and that won that game, obviously, with a walk-off blast. So that kind of reminded me of that shot.
Well, no, this one was that one was a little higher.
It was a little higher.
Because this one would have been a double last year.
But I think it left a dent in the wall, though.
Yeah, well, it hit the permanent wall and bounced back into the home run terrace. Yeah. You know, those guys had to look for watch out for, like, splinters of wall. You know, it's not the bomb that gets you. It's the little
shrapnel. That's it. Yeah, it's the shrapnel. So they're going to go back. It's 2-3-2 format, so they're going to play three games at Jingu Stadium, and I'm hoping the Swallows
hopefully
can push it to that fifth game, but it just doesn't look good for them right now.
Yeah, I could tell you who SoftBank's fifth game starter is going to be, but then he might get arrested or something, so you know, we don't do that. We don't want that.
Well, who do you see starting number three, game three?
I have no idea, but
I think they're going to give Setsu the ball. I think, why not? Setsu, it's time for Tadashi Setsu to make an appearance here in the postseason.
But the person who's slated to pitch Game 5 said, I hope we lose one.
So that you can pitch, huh?
Yep.
It's always about the team.
Hashtag high heat.
It is. Well,
at least they'd have us believe that. All right, well, I'm going to, you know, I took predictions on the Facebook page and on Twitter, and I said, you know, I'm going to pull for the Swallows to win in six, and I'm hoping they make it interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do too. I didn't. I don't know what I used to make fairly bold predictions. I don't know. I'm getting timid in my old age. In my older age, I was old then. But you know, I used to predict sweeps a lot if I thought it was going to happen. I wasn't timid, but I think because the Swallows are in it,
makes you rethink.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, the last time I think I really blew a Japan series prediction, I mean, like really badly, was 2001. Oh, I have to include 2002. I didn't foresee the 90-win Lions folding like imitation playing cards, like they weren't even strong enough to be playing cards.
Well, 2001, like, what, you didn't think your Swallows were
going to do well? What happened is, basically, the stuff I look at, usually you assume the championship team has good defense. You assume you make some assumptions, but the Buffaloes had terrible defense. And the Swallows, you know, normally that takes high average hitting teams and stops them in their tracks. Mm-hmm. But the Buffaloes really didn't have a good defense, and so the Swallows just singled them to death. just kept punching holes in them like there was no tomorrow.
Right. All right, so hopefully they'll make it a series, and we won't be wrapping this whole thing up until after, you know, sometime after Sunday night. But we'll have to see. I'm gonna stick with the Swallows winning a couple games.
Speak for yourself. I'm a Swallows fan, but yeah, I'd also like to avoid having to come to. I love Fukuoka, but I'd like to have a day off instead.
All right, so it's all about the team. All right, gotcha. With you as well. I gotcha.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad they're probably really glad I'm a fan of theirs now.
One SoftBank guy wants his team to lose a game so he can pitch, and Jim Allen wants a day off. All right, I got it. All right, let's wrap this thing up. All right, let's move on to the manager mania we saw go on this past week.
Do you buy a ticket for that, like WrestleMania?
You can. I think they sell them at Ticketpia.
Yeah. Okay. So that means we're gonna see like Alex Ramirez and Yoshinobu Takahashi in a death match or something.
I hope not a death match. Just your regular wrestling match. But anyway, Alex Ramirez of the Yokohama DeNA Bay Stars was named the manager of that team. Yoshinobu Takahashi was basically snatched off the field and thrown onto the bench for the Yomiuri Giants. And Tomoaki Kanemoto is going to lead the charge for the Hanshin Tigers. But I want to start with Ramirez. And I wasn't able to go to the press conference, but I had a friend go out there and tape the press conference for me. And we have that for you guys. I've cut out all the Japanese questions and let Alex speak on his own. And basically, it's pretty straightforward and easy to follow. There is one question about who he expects or what kind of player he expects to pick in the draft, because the draft, this was on Wednesday that he had his press conference, and the draft was the next day on Thursday, and he was there at the meeting in Tokyo, or the draft meeting they call it, and he was the person picking. We'll talk about the draft in a little while. That's one of the other topics on the table, so I'll get to that. So I'll save my rant for then, I guess. So let's go ahead and take a listen to what Alex had to say.
Yokohama DeNA ベイスターズの監督のアレン・ラミレス、ラミちゃんです。よろしくお願いします。It is an honor for me to be presented today as the new manager of the Yokohama DeNA ベイスターズ. Especially this wonderful city is a privilege for me to be here and to give these wonderful fans what they've been waiting for many years, that it is to win the championship. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you very much. I would like to say that when I came here a couple years ago, I came here with a purpose, with a reason. Coming to this organization where they have so many young players with great talent. And I always thought that this will be the best place for me to start my career as a manager. Today is a dream come true. And I'd like to thank the organization for this great opportunity and all the fans to cheer for me for this opportunity. I always made my comments, during my career about becoming a manager here in Japan, that it was my dream. I never expected to be this early. In my career, I had a great career as a baseball player, and that is the reason why this organization believes that this is the right timing for me to be the manager. So I'm very happy again. First of all, last year had the first half of the season, it was great. Second half of the season, of course, the team came down a little bit, but we cannot ignore those things. We have to learn those things and bring it to next year. Try to see our mistakes that we made last year and try to change those mistakes to a positive way. So those are the things that we're gonna practice from now. How we can get there. Our team is a very young team, and we have a lot of passion. And we need to do things the right way to be able to be consistent next year and win the championship. As we have a very young team, I strongly believe that our team can be very aggressive. Be aggressive when we need to be aggressive. Don't just be aggressive because those things I would like for my team to do. We have a great pitching staff, and I believe that we can put it together. Our offense, we're working to put the pieces together and combine the two. But I strongly believe our pitching staff is going to take over the team next year. We got a lot of young players, and the number one player we have is Tsutsugo-san. And we want to build our team around him. Kaitani-san is another player that is becoming one of the best players in the Central League as well. And we have to build the team around him. I strongly believe that we can, now with seeing the what we have in the minor leagues and the system, we can see how we can build a team around those two players for next year. Well, I don't feel the pressure. I'm very confident that I'm going to pick the right player that is going to help us to win the championship next year. Yes, that's my goal. I have a lot of expectation for myself and for my team. And that is the number one goal, is to win the championship. As everybody knows, I have that many performances in my whole career. And some people don't even know my name, but they know my performance. But that was when I was a player. Now as a country dude, I am not going to do performance because I feel that should be for the players. So I'm hoping, and I would like for Tsutsugo-san and Kaitani-san or maybe another players to take over my performance. I'll be more than happy to see them doing performance. I believe that you can call me Kantoku Rami-chan. Everybody knows me as Rami-chan, and I would like to keep it like that. And Kantoku Rami-chan would be the best name that you can call me. Well, I would like to say that I would like to thank all the fans for all the support. And I would like to say that I'm very honored to be a manager of this organization, Yokohama DeNA BayStars, and I'm going to try to do my best to win the championship next year and to give back to the fans what they've been waiting for many years. So keep coming, keep cheering for the team, and we're going to bring the championship next year. Thank you very much. Yes, I have confidence that I'm going to pick the right person, the right player for our organization. I would like to be a manager that has a good relationship with the players. Of course, I would like to be a very aggressive manager, and I would like to teach my players that baseball is a mind game. So those are the things that I would like to teach, and I would like to be that kind of manager. Manager, the manager they can control as mentor more than anything. Well, I have played under four managers in Japan, and I have learned a little bit of everything from each manager. So, of course, I would love to use my own style of managing. But it's always good to have things from other managers. They can really help me to gather the team together. I would say maybe when I was a player for the Tokyo Giants, I started thinking that I had a chance to become a manager. But my desire to become very stronger when I came to this organization, my first year. That I felt that this was the team that I had a chance to become the manager and start my career as a manager. I always expressed myself that I wanted to be a manager here in Japan. Not because I wanted to be a manager, but it was because I learned so much about Japanese baseball. And I know American baseball, Japanese baseball, and also Latin baseball, so I felt that it was good for me to become a manager here in Japan, especially with this organization. Oh, I speak Japanese when I'm on the field. I speak more Japanese than what people think that I speak. So when I'm with the players, I always speak Japanese to them. And so if they look at me and they smile, they're okay, they do what I'm saying, that means they understand, so it's okay. So in Japanese, I'm gonna try. No, those things I will need interpreter, because I want to make sure that things are done the right way and they understand exactly the point that I'm trying to make to make the team better. So all the strategy things, it will be I will be using my translator. At this point, I strongly believe that GM Takada-san is putting a great coaching staff for me together. And I trust his judgment. And at this point, we have to wait and see, you know, what we're going to get. But we strongly believe that he's putting a great coaching staff. My contract is a three-year contract, so this is something that I'm very very happy. Let's let's put something together, you know. So, well, this is a wonderful city. The atmosphere here is just unbelievable. Great places. I love being, you know, being here. The people are very baseball sports oriented, and you know, they love the team and they really support the team. And this is a very traditional place. And I'm very happy to be part of this city and give what they've been waiting for a long time is to bring the championship to them.
All right, so Jim, what did you think of his introductory press conference there?
Well, I wish I'd been there because I would have had a couple of questions.
Yeah, me too. They were
talked about that so much, you know, about especially about the style of managing. And I, you know, we've talked about it on the show, so I don't think it's particularly in relation to the Julio Franco comments earlier this year after your interview. Mm-hmm. And I guess a couple of things were interesting for me. You know, talking about what a wonderful team the of course you got to say what a wonderful team it is. You can't say, wow, these guys are stinking up the joint.
Well, they didn't stink up the joint. They stunk it up when it came to winning games, but they didn't stink up the games. If that makes sense.
I mean, they only stunk up in the standings. Okay. So I did like the expression, be aggressive when we need to be aggressive. Don't just be aggressive because.
Yes, Dave Okubo.
Exactly. I'm thinking, because we're not the Eagles.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to say that. That's the only thing he left out. You know, hey, Dave Okubo, hey, Eagles, don't just run into a bunch of outs.
Yeah, so I think, you know, and the other thing about the mistakes, the second half, in other words, they were a good team in the first half and they made mistakes in the second half. I'm not quite buying that. I think basically everything went their way in the first half. And things didn't go their way in the second half. And I think that was the struggle. I don't think it was mistakes. I think they just were not prepared for things to go against them.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Michael Westbay is probably a better judge of that because he watched and witnessed some of those games or most of those games. But I would say that they did play well. They played better in the first half of the season, and they didn't hit as well in the second half of the season. And because they didn't hit as well, those mistakes were glaring. Because I think they made – I think what you're saying is basically the same. Things went their way in terms of the standings. But I think they basically played the same. It's just that they didn't hit as well. They didn't score as much. So those errors or those misplays or those batted balls not turned into outs, people stealing bases or getting extra bases, those things stood out more because they weren't scoring in the second half, and it showed up or manifested itself in the standings, and they weren't able to sustain what they had done over the first half. That's what my impression was.
Well, the Bay Stars are I think they're pretty much the prototypical Bay Stars team. They're fairly weak offensively, and I'll tell you, since last year, what Nakahata did do, you know, by playing all these young guys, was he gave them a defense. He played guys who could actually run, and they played better defense, and that helped the pitchers. And they got a couple of pitchers who, you know, they made. I thought it was a great switch for them, and I think, you know, he deserves credit for taking Yamaguchi out of the. Well, actually, by that time he was in the farm team bullpen, and making him a starter. He was useless. So he wasn't as good this year, but it was a good move. So he did a few things. He and his staff did a few things that helped the pitching and the defense. The offense is a shambles. Although as Mr. Ramirez, I think I'll just call him Mr. Ramirez from now on. I think Ramichand is not suitable for a manager, regardless what he says and regardless of whether or not he dances or not.
Well, we can call him the manager known as. Ramichand.
Formerly known as Ramichand.
That's even better.
So I think there are the pieces. And I think, as he stated, one, there's Tsutsugo, and there are a couple of other young players who are really good. By a couple of other, I think he means Takayuki Kajitani and a player to be named later.
I think he's talking about that pitcher.
Yasuaki Yamasaki.
He's talking about Yasuaki Yamasaki as well, I think, because he established himself as a full player. I don't know. For me, I don't know if it was a conscious thing that he did or not, but I loved it. And what I loved was that he said, when he was talking about last season and referring to the mistakes that were made, he said, "We made mistakes last year." So he's already taken ownership of the team. You know, he's taking responsibility for even what happened last year, and he's looking forward to next year as we. And I love that attitude. Whether he did it consciously or not, I don't know, but I think he did.
Well, I think he's been affiliated with them for several years,
and that's part of it.
And I think that's part of it. I think he has a strong, obviously said part of his. And I think that was clear, that part of one of the reasons he picked a DNA out of the hat when he left the Giants was that opportunity.
And so, yeah, he said building around Tsutsugo and Kajitani is the best way to go. And he's a smart man. We know that. And the other things that impressed me, he said, look, he wants to teach these young guys how much of a mind game that baseball is. And we, obviously, from having him on the show, he was another guest who has been on the show numerous times through the years. And one of the interviews that I did, I asked him about, you know, how much it is a mental game and how much of it is physical. And he talked about how it's much more a mental game than it is physical. So, you know, when I hear him, obviously you did an interview with him earlier this year, and he talked about the fact that Tsutsugo is one of the not all time, but he made the comparison to Hideki Matsui, which I thought was pretty, you know, putting him in pretty lofty company there.
I don't think it's just comparable, in the sense that he hasn't learned his craft as quickly as Matsui did.
Right, but he can go on that road, but I certainly
can go on that road. Matsui has a couple of years head start on him. He didn't spend 2 and 3 years bouncing up and down in the farm team. So he's not the best comparison. He might be a better comparison to, I'll skip who he might be a better comparison to. But I gave him, I don't remember, but he was either second or third on my MVP ballot for the Central League. So,
all right. So, but you know, the thing that it brought me back to that interview that you did with him earlier this year, when he talked about Tsutsugo, and I thought, you know, the way he left Oryx, it was kind of immediate after the season. It was kind of, you know, without a lot of fanfare. And the same with Nakahata leaving DeNA. And it just seemed to me that this whole situation kind of was on the table, it seemed to me. That, you know, it was in the works, and it was all calculated. And one guy would sneak out the back door while the other guy was walking through the front door, basically, or vice versa.
I think that was the final timing. It was fairly short. I mean, it wasn't. the Buffaloes, when they announced their moves at the end of the season, they announced that Ramirez was leaving at his request.
Right.
Now, Mr. Takasaki, who works for TBS, who's, you know, is connected with the Bay Stars and who's close to both Takada and Nakahata, told me that essentially Ramirez was their, according to him, was Ramirez was their third choice. One, they were looking for a foreign manager.
Yeah, I had heard Bobby Rose, the former player.
Yeah, Bobby Rose and Trey Hillman was the other.
Okay.
According to Mr. Takasaki.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Did he tell you why they were looking for a foreign manager?
No, but apparently the reason they settled on Ramirez, and I'm not doing this, is I think basically Ramirez really wanted to manage, which made him more available than other people.
Mm.
I think the reason they didn't get a Japanese manager is because, well, I can't, Mr. Takasaki speculated about that, but I don't want to cast aspersions.
All right. Well, what's your call on Ramirez being the skipper? I'm thinking, yes, it's a great, he said in the interview, he's got a 2-year deal. I think it's a great chance for him. Certainly he's going to instill, and as we recall, actually this came from another JBW interview, but he talked about the fact that when he was a player there with the Bay Stars, he would give some of the younger players some advice, but at some point he was asked to stop giving them advice.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. There was a similar story from Oryx, basically, that the older coaches, and again, this is just a story, so you shouldn't give it too much weight, but that some of the coaches weren't happy with having him as an advisor. See, that none of this surprises me about Oryx, because basically the two people running the front office are trying, their number one priority is to make sure the other guy isn't running the front office.
Right.
Rather than the team.
So what's your call, basically? I think it's a good hire. I think it's a good direction. I wish they would have given him more than a 2-year deal, because I don't know that 2 years is enough to make the impact that he wants. Because, A, he's worked, having gone to play in the independent leagues, he knows the hunger some of these guys have who are the up-and-comers. And he's probably going to be able to manipulate and use young players and bring them up and down when he needs them, but keep them sharp, keep them ready to compete on the top team level, but use whatever resources he has freely.
Mm-hmm. Well,
maybe better than Nakahata.
I think. Well, the Bay Stars, I can't speak. I think they're better than they used to be. They used to be one of these teams where late bloomers were essentially left to rot on the vine. You know, you're not the player we thought you'd be when we drafted you. If a guy sort of became good in the minors after a couple of years, they didn't notice it. If he didn't become good right away, pretty much, or he wasn't a number one draft choice, basically, that guy is dead wood.
Yeah.
And that was the old Bay Stars. They've gotten better since then. They've had guys bounce up and down a bit, guys who've taken time. So that's an improvement. But what I think in that context, not only did Ramirez play in Guma, but the previous year he spent most of it, after he got his 2000th hit, in Yokosuka on the Bay Stars farm team. So he knows these guys from looking at them on a daily basis.
Right. All right. Well, so you think it's a good call?
I have no idea. I think he brings, this is something he's thought a lot about, you know, how he's basically been an adapter. He adapted to life in America as a teenager from Venezuela, and he's adapted to life in Japan, and he's grown roots here, and he's very adaptative.
Okay.
And I think he will, and because he's thought about it so long, I think he will imply himself fully. I think he'll make a lot of mistakes, but he will, you know, take them in stride, and I think he'll improve the team. You know, how much, I don't know, but I think he'll, you know, it's hard to say that, you know, they don't have a lot. You know, it's a lot harder to fall out of last place.
I like that. That's a good line. Well, Yoshinobu Takahashi, his career has fallen off.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden. They called him in. I this is like being summoned by the elders.
Yeah.
The community elders, it seemed like he was sleeping, and somebody woke him up and said, "They're calling you. Come on, get dressed." And they threw some clothes on him, threw some water on him, combed his hair, and pushed him in front of the elders, and they said, "Hey, we need you to lead this team." And he's like, "What? I just woke up. You know,
yeah,
I'm playing here. What are you talking about?"
Right.
So the whole thing smacked to me of a team without a plan, and a whole bunch of things came to mind. First, I remember last year when Hideki Matsui's name came up as a possible replacement for the current manager at the time.
And he said, basically, "Don't worry. That Hara is still managing. We'll fix that.
Yeah.
So, we'll take care of it. Don't worry."
So they want, and I thought, okay, well, he's the only guy I know who could say no to the elders and still, you know, walk out of the room.
Hara's basically told him to go pound sand twice now in his career.
Well, like, you know, and it seemed like he was on the fence anyway. Now, whether that fence was of his own making or not, we don't know, but. Obviously, with the Hideki Matsui situation, and then the not having a contract, and you brought that up, and I think it's kudos to you for bringing that up earlier this year on the show, talking about the fact that he didn't have a contract, and he was kind of in limbo, but you know, it's not something that people are talking about.
Well, I think the fact that did the Giants push him? No, and you know why they didn't push him? It's because they didn't have anybody to replace him with.
Is what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. They wanted to basically haul him to the woodshed and then say, you know, "Get your act together, son, you know, and be all, we're going to run the show. We don't like the way you're doing it, but we don't have a better solution now. So we're going to stick with you."
Yeah. And I couldn't believe I went into the office on Tuesday and the buzz was, you know, Takahashi's going to become the next manager. And I'm like, "What?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you know, he's meeting upstairs with the bigwigs." And I'm like, "What?" And obviously, you know, Hada had said goodbye, had resigned, and they allowed it. But this whole thing smacks of a team that did not have a plan, didn't have a plan A, didn't have a plan B. And this is completely reactionary, and they're unprepared. And it's very un-Yomiuri, like, if you ask me. I mean, it's a near panic move in my eyes.
Well, you know, I'm sure you or this came up, that the last time Hara left, they didn't announce he was leaving. I mean, everybody, you know, the writing was on the wall. But they didn't announce he was leaving until they had his replacement ready to announce. They announced him at the same press conference. Hara's leaving and is being replaced by Tsuneo Horiuchi. At which point, Tsuneo Watanabe, the generalissimo, I mean, whatever, his senior advisor or fascist dictator or whatever.
Whatever
you better not laugh. You may be in career danger. You have to sound stern and embarrassed.
Oh, okay.
Concerned for my well-being.
All right, that'll be stone Nabe, silence on this end.
Nabe Tsune blamed, basically told reporters that if Hara didn't win the pennant in 2003, that he was in big trouble. And then he blamed the reporters for Hara quitting for rewriting what he said when he was inebriated.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "This is your fault that he's leaving."
Yeah.
Not that I said something when I was drunk and I'm an idiot.
Well, Yoshinobu, 18 years as a player, and I get the idea as well, because he came out of this meeting on Tuesday saying, "Well, if I'm going to be the manager, I'm not going to be a player manager." And this year he came in as a player coach, and I got the idea that they would say, "You're going to take off that uniform as a manager, and as a player, and you're going to sit on the bench, and that's that." And he said, "Give me some time to think about it." And I joked around today at the office. I thought, he says, that time to think about it was, you know, see if he could run away.
Hashtag hi.
See if another team would sign
him. See if anybody was following him. And if they were, that he was going to come back and say, "I'll take the job."
I'm sure he was eligible as a free agent. He was probably thinking whether he should be a free agent and go to another team as a player, because he couldn't turn him down and still play.
Right.
That might have happened, actually. I don't know how likely that is. But, you know, in retrospect, and I Takahashi has never struck me or most people as the brightest, you know, the sharpest tool in the shed.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. When Tatsunori Hara was named Giants manager, this is a guy who was on TV and he was a big star. He was a big star whose best years happened early in his career, and then he went into steady decline, and he just kind of whittled away until, oh, let's give this guy a big retirement ceremony. Now, of course, the Giants could be thinking, if we name Takahashi manager, we won't have to give him a lavish retirement ceremony. That could be one. I doubt that. I doubt that. But what struck me, and I'll tell you how wrong I was about Hara. My thought about Hara, or I think I even wrote this in a column, that he has all the charisma of Sadaharu Oh and all the brains of Shigeo Nagashima. Yeah, which Oh is not a charismatic fellow, and Nagashima is not the sharpest tool in the shed. But in turn,
he's not a tool in the shed.
Man, so anyway, it's not the brightest bulb. You know, whatever. Pick a cliche, but he wasn't that. You know, he wasn't a particularly clever guy, and he was a star. And the player who he reminded me most, the player on the Giants roster who Hara reminded me most when he took over, was Yoshinobu Takahashi.
Mm.
He was like, I'm a star. Let me be a star. That's my job, to be a star, as opposed to being a ball player.
Right.
As opposed to playing to win. It was about playing to be a star. Anyway, so I didn't have high hopes for Hara, but what he did was he really revolutionized what it means to be a Giants manager. He completely changed the map. And, you know, I don't know, maybe Takahashi can do the same thing. And famously, what sealed it for a lot of things sealed it for me, but in Hara's first term in 2002 and 2003, he took all these fringe players and said, look, I'm going to give you a chance to play. And, you know, don't blow it. Don't make mistakes. It's, you know, give it your best shot. And, if you know, and I trust you, so I'll give you another chance to play. That was very un-Giants.
Right.
And he brought guys up from the minor leagues. He got guys who he thought could play, and he let them play to see if they could. Okay, that was the number one. And then number two, when he came back the second time in 2006, one of the first things he did was send Takahashi to the minors because he wasn't performing. That was a shock. That was a huge shock. That was a huge wake-up call to the Giants players. He's benching one of these icons.
Mm-hmm.
He's sending him to the minors because he's not getting the job done. And that was Hara. Hara had that strength to deal with the roster and to make his own way. It wasn't about what Yomiuri wanted in terms of personnel. It wasn't who they were signing. It was, who do I need to win games? Who do I need to bring up? Who do I need to test? Who do I need to motivate? And, you know, who knows? Takahashi could be the same thing.
Well, what I saw was, you know, Hara has always had a good staff, and I think the Giants have a good system in place, and I think they just need a face to go with that system, and I don't think a lot's going to change in that respect. But I also think that a guy who like this, who's maybe not enthusiastic and is going to have to learn on the job and is going to try some things, he's going to make some mistakes, just like you said, Alex Ramirez is. So I don't actually see it as a good move for them, but it might be down the line, but maybe not right away. So we'll see how that, we'll watch and see how that goes. Now, Hanshin brought in Tomoaki Kanemoto. We talked about it the last time on our last show, but he had his press conference after the draft, and we will get to draft day. We're going to have to zip through it, though, but we're going to get to draft day quickly. I really think this is a good hire for this team. He's going to force the Tigers players, all of them, to work hard individually and then work hard as a team. And I think he's going to have a plan, and he's going to make his guys, he's going to try his hardest to make these guys execute. The problem is, and like I said, the leadership is great, but it might be too much. It might be too harsh. It might be, you know, if guys don't buy in or if they're not on the same page with him, I don't think it's going to go well right away. And it's going to take some time for them. So I think the adjustment period will be a little bit more obvious maybe with them in some places and some phases of their game. But in the end, I think eventually, whether he still remains as the manager of the Tigers or not, I think eventually he's going to be a really good manager.
I think what you say is all true. And a couple of things I'll just add to that. One, he's fearless. He's not afraid of anybody. He's not afraid of anything. And, you know, that's it's a wonderful attitude. He basically told the team, basically, if you guys don't change, the team ain't going to change. If the team don't change, some heads are going to roll.
And it's not going to be mine.
Well, that will be – it will eventually.
Well, that's what he's going to tell him. It's not going to be mine.
Right. So that was one thing. And then the other thing, you know, and I've talked far too long about the relationship between the Hanshin Tigers and the media. He has – I can tell he's got a plan in place for dealing with the media, which is to become Shigeo Nagashima. And he said in the first comments after it was confirmed that he was manager, he said, I think it's very difficult to win when you're rebuilding your team. So what we're going to do is focus on winning. And then while we're winning, we'll rebuild.
All right. Chase your other tail.
Exactly. Okay. You take that and go enjoy.
Go enjoy, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. All right. Well, let's talk about draft day because Kanemoto was involved in an interesting thing that happened on draft day. Now, this was Thursday. You know, I one little rant real quickly. And Don Nomura was ranting on the same day on Twitter. And I joined
Nomura
in.
Don Nomura ranting? Wow.
The same thing about the draft. And I said, look, it's almost ludicrous to look at the draft and assume that this team did well and that team did poorly because, as I always say, first of all, this draft is not done for competitive balance. It just, you know, guys just end up where they end up. Players develop at different speeds. They develop different physically, mentally. You can draft a player and say, this guy is the jewel of the draft and blah, blah, blah. But if he doesn't really develop physically or mentally over the time period that you assign to him because he's a great high school player or college player or industrial league player, then you label them a bust and say, well, this guy's no good or whatever happens. So, yeah, I hate this draft. We don't see good teams. I mean, it should have been Oryx, the Bay Stars, the Eagles, and the Dragons drafting, you know, at the top and the other teams drafting later, and it wasn't. And, you know, the Dragons tried to get a really good a player who's really valued very high in a pitcher, and they weren't able to get him because they lost the draw. So it's just ridiculous. So I look at this. I mean, it's silly. And for the Hawks to come away with a pitcher who's supposedly the jewel of the high school crop when they have the best pitching already in all of Japan is just, it's just ridiculous. So anyway, in the meantime, the incident that I think was kind of a black eye for that draft was a mix-up that resulted as Yakult skipper Mitsuru Manaka thought he had picked the winning lot, and he opened his envelope and he pumped his fist, and then Kanemoto decided, well, if he's pumping his fist, he must have won this draft lottery. So he didn't look inside his envelope, and after a commercial break, we got an announcement from an official who said, oh, by the way, the Yakult Swallows did not get the winning lot that went to Hanshin, and they came away with I don't want to call them a blue chip, but a blue chip prospect in Shun Takayama from Meiji University, and he broke a 48-year-old record for hits in the season for college. What is it? The Tokyo Six, was it?
Mm-hmm.
So that was really goofy. Now, I thought it was the first time it was the first time that I had seen something like that, but you said it had happened before.
2005, mm-hmm. And it was a young Daikon, Yodaikon, for those of you following NPB Romaji at home.
Oh, okay.
Okay, young Daikon, the kid out of high school from Fukuoka, who's originally from Taiwan, was coveted by the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks and the Nippon Ham Fighters, and apparently somebody drew the lot, and then they didn't know at this time you wouldn't know you had the winner because they essentially the only difference was one of them had a stamp on it, one of them had a, you know, like NPB official seal in red on it, and the others didn't. nobody knew what the winning ballots looked like, and they still have the same problem except now that they provide the media and the managers or the teams with a diagram, you know, with a picture
Lots of literature. They tell you
what's going on. Here, this is the winner. This is the loser. And nobody, I guess Monaco is too busy thinking about the Japan series to look at the, it's a draft. How hard can it be?
We forgive him. But this was kind of wild for me to sit there and watch this unfold and take place. And Monaco goes on and makes a speech, and then they cut to commercial break, and then they come back and they bring Kanemoto up, and he makes a speech to the kid, and the kid basically was going to be with the Swallows, where he played his college balls, the same park where he played his college ball. Now he's going to go to Koshi. I mean, you know, it's probably not that big for him. The park is different for sure, but two famous parks in Japan, I don't think he can complain about the teams. But man, I'd rather play for Monaco than Kanemoto at this point right now, if I was a young player.
I guess I have a rant too. Now, you were talking about it's not for competitive balance. And let me ask you, what draft is for competitive balance?
Yeah, we've talked about this before and we've gotten back. But I just think that the teams, what draft is, I don't know.
They've become
the NBA draft.
Well, they try. Yeah, they try.
The NFL draft for sure.
And, you know, in baseball, essentially, the drafts in MLB and Japan were started, again, not for the purpose of competitive balance. And the MLB is the same. They were basically set up because amateur players were able to charge market value for their services. And heaven forbid if baseball players want market value for their services. You know, this is outrageous. Who do they think they are? They're nobody. So let's rig it. You know, this is the whole thing in Japan where, you know, rant's going to continue for about another 30 seconds, you know, where we can punish players who don't break any rules for not doing what we want them to do, such as Junichi Tozawa can't play for Japan. Well, yeah, because you turned your back on NPB, and NPB is bigger than everything. So, you know, that whole thing, you have too many rights as an individual. Let's take some of those. That's the competitive battle.
You have too many rights.
You've got
sit down and shut up.
Exactly.
You swing the bat, you throw the ball, and that's it.
Yeah,
and you catch the ball.
I want to pitch in the majors. You know, let's get rid of that stuff. Who do you want to play for? How much money? Shut up.
Yeah.
Mind your business. Shut up. And that's what the draft is all about.
Right. So, right. I mean, I see all these guys going, and I see on Twitter people talking, oh, we got this guy, we got that guy. And I'm like, you don't know what you got.
No, true.
Ichiro Suzuki, where did he go?
Fourth round.
Okay.
Kanemoto, same round, same draft, fourth round. Norihiro Nakamura, fourth round. Yeah. Shinjiro Hayama, fourth round.
Thank you.
So, I gotta mention that every about 6 months.
Okay. I mean, I think the only guys I remember who were first-round guys who really did something big were Hideki Matsui, I think, was a first-round draft pick.
There's a lot out there. Quite a few. Pretty much if you look at it, if you study it, you know, the high school players drafted first do better than the high school players drafted second. The college guys drafted first do better. You know, they have, in general, a good idea, but there's so many low draft picks. They don't have a clue. I mean, if it were, and our former boss, Mr. Jim Nishi, rest in peace, used to say, they know everybody and they know everything. If that were the case, nobody would ever draft anybody out of the independent leagues. Mm-hmm. Because those guys, if they knew how good they would be, they would have drafted him. Kakunaka wouldn't have played in the independent leagues before the Marines made him a third round draft choice.
Right. All right. So we got to move on. We got to get off this topic. But
good.
You know, it takes time for guys to develop. We don't really know what they have. Some guys will appear. Some guys will do well. We always have a rookie who comes out of nowhere, and then we always have a rookie we have high expectations for who, you know, does or does not come through. So,
sure.
I mean, you just have to watch. They're all different. All right. Sure. We didn't touch on this, and I wanted to make note of it. There was a gambling scandal that went on, and it involved some Yomiuri Giants players, and I think a couple weeks ago we heard the first of it, maybe more than a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure. But we were so busy with other things that we didn't get around to talking about it. And then this past Wednesday, two more pitchers from the Giants were said to be involved. And, you know, zipping through this quickly, I can't say that I'm shocked. I'm just kind of shocked that it's the Giants and that they're getting caught and that guys who are erasing emails in this day and age and think that they won't be caught or found out about. It's kind of silly. But anyway, it's kind of a black eye for the club. It's a black eye for baseball. But obviously, they weren't found to have been match fixing or doing anything like that. These guys are not major players. And I think that's why this is probably going to go away.
Right.
Fairly quietly, because these are not major players and they weren't involved in match fixing, and the integrity and the
right, and
the
because
game has not been compromised.
Right, and because they're Giants players, you're not going to have Tsuneo Watanabe complaining about these other teams bringing Japanese baseball down and screaming bloody murder.
Yeah, that too.
Which is what he did when, the Lions said, "Well, we found our team used to." Had paid these amateurs, and we believe it's our study shows it's prevalent. Everybody said, "Shut up, shut." We had a third party panel that investigated Japanese baseball, and they found this to be a very common practice. Shut up! We don't have any corruption or rule breaking here. Be quiet.
Mm, yeah, no corruption.
But because the Giants, there won't be anybody saying that.
Yeah,
it'll be. Oh, okay, let's go about our business. Nothing here to see, as John likes to say.
Nothing to see here, folks. Back away. All right, so the other thing is it's against the NPB charter, number one. And the other thing is it's illegal in Japan. So
yep.
Those are the major problems. But again, if these guys end up going to getting arrested, which they haven't been, right? I haven't heard anything about the arrest part of it. It's just been about the black eye. So I don't really see much coming out of this. And I was the one who predicted that the ball change would end up costing the commissioner his job. And that did. But with this, I don't really see anything coming of it. Seriously.
Well, maybe if we're lucky, it will cost the current commissioner's job. But he's a very he's a bit of a lapdog, so I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Other notes, MVPs are coming up. I don't think it's even a discussion this year. I think Tetsuto Yamada in the Central League and Yuki Yanagita in the Pacific League. I can't see anybody unless Atsunori Inaba clones himself and starts taking over the ballast. That I don't see any way this.
No, I think he's got to wrestle you first before that.
Well, if he's wrestling me, he might win that. But yeah, if we can shoot some hoops or something for it, that's something I have an opportunity to compete in, then I got him. Anyway, I don't see anybody screwing this up this year.
Well, anyway, so if they're unanimous, which they should be, people who think about these things, you know, who actually analyze them, think they should be, yeah. And by that I mean me.
Who didn't know that?
I'm sorry, I left that one hanging. It left you hanging in suspense there. I mean, you see these things, and it's fairly obvious. And you know, the last do you remember the last unanimous MVP we had?
No,
it wasn't long ago.
No.
If I say 24-0, does that ring a bell?
Oh, Masahiro Tanaka. Yeah, that does ring a bell.
I didn't think he was even. You know, he was not nearly as close as being, and I thought he was a border because he's a starting pitcher. He was a borderline MVP, but you know how starting pitchers get rated in Japan. So
right.
So there's that. But you know, it should be unanimous.
Two notes. One, Hirokazu Ibata, one of my favorite players in MPB and a former Dragons great. Called it quits. He's hanging it up, as well as Kenshin Kawakami. And these are guys who, after the season, decided, you know what, I'm done. And there were a few more other guys. I can't remember all of them offhand, but these were the guys who kind of stood out for me and Jim.
Well, yeah, Kawakami stood out because he had a great Kawakami's such a smart guy. And he had the best, I think he had one of the best retirement press conferences I've heard. And somebody asked him, he said, because he's rehabbing, he had shoulder surgery this year. He didn't pitch at all. And he said, right now I'm not able to pitch. But if I can come back, if I can throw and be myself, I'm going to ask the Dragons for a tryout. Because you know what? Okay, now a little background here. Okay, Kawakami he joined the Dragons out of Meiji University. He left for the majors. He came back to the Dragons. He was cut from the Dragons 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and then sort of they negotiated a settlement, and they gave him a two-year contract. So he's had three press conferences where he announced he was signing as a Dragons player.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want to do a tryout because if I can do it, I want to see what it's like to have four entry signing press conferences.
Four introductory and
I want to be introduced as a new Dragons player for the fourth time.
The fourth time. All right. Well, why don't you concentrate on getting your fourth no hitter? How about that? And on that note, we will end the show. Thanks a lot for listening, guys. If you want to send us an email, we didn't have any questions this week, so send your email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at JBW Podcast, hashtag it high heat, or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. Thanks a lot for listening, and enjoy your postseason. One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.